The following audiobooks contain AI-generated content and may contain errors. This audiobook narration presents Commercial Cleaning in Massachusetts, Pricing, Staffing, and Route Strategy for Recurring Contracts. Topic Introduction. Commercial cleaning is one of those businesses that can look straightforward until someone has to run it. From the outside, it seems to be about mops, vacuums, chemicals, and labor hours. But once a company starts serving real clients, in real buildings, with real schedules and real expectations, the business becomes something more demanding and more interesting. It becomes a study in reliability. It becomes a study in trust. And it becomes a study in how ordinary-looking work can turn into a durable company when the founder understands what clients are actually buying.
That is the central idea of this lecture. In commercial cleaning, the client is rarely paying simply for effort. The client is paying for consistent results inside someone else's workplace, delivered on time, according to site rules, with enough care that the building can be left secure and ready for use. That distinction changes everything. It changes how the service is priced, how accounts are chosen, how workers are scheduled, how quality is checked, and how a company grows without drifting into chaos. For anyone considering this business in the United States, and especially for anyone looking at Massachusetts as a market, that distinction is not abstract. It is the difference between a company that stays busy and a company that stays healthy.
This lecture is designed for adult learners who already have some business familiarity and want a practical, market-specific understanding of how commercial cleaning actually works. It is for prospective founders, current operators, and serious students of small business who want more than a generic overview. The goal is not to romanticize the industry and not to reduce it to easy service work either. The goal is to show how a cleaning company functions as a commercial system. That means understanding the kind of demand the market creates, the choices a founder must make at the start, the logic behind pricing and bidding, and the operating habits that preserve margin as the business grows. Massachusetts makes a particularly useful case study because it combines strong demand with real competitive pressure. Dense commercial districts, professional buildings, retail corridors, industrial sites, healthcare-adjacent facilities, and post-construction work all create opportunity. But opportunity in a market like that does not reward vagueness. It rewards focus. It rewards route discipline. It rewards clear estimating. It rewards an owner who can think in terms of service segments, account fit, labor planning, access rules, and retention. In other words, it rewards a founder who understands that a cleaning company is not built only by getting more work, but by getting the right work on terms the company can actually deliver. Over the course of the lecture, the listener is guided from foundations to commercial logic to operating systems. The first task is to understand what kind of business this really is and why recurring service matters so much. The next task is to understand how a quote becomes a price, how a price becomes a contract, and how a contract becomes either a stable relationship or a future problem. Then the focus shifts to the systems that hold everything together once the company starts to scale: staffing, scheduling, documentation, quality control, compliance, safety, and the use of tools that make the work repeatable rather than improvised. There is a larger tension running through the whole subject, and it is worth naming at the start. Commercial cleaning is physically simple in one sense, and organizationally demanding in another. Many new entrants can imagine how to do the labor. Far fewer can build a company that does the labor reliably, profitably, and repeatedly across multiple accounts. The challenge is not only to clean a building. The challenge is to build a business that can be trusted inside many buildings, night after night, without depending on memory, heroics, or constant owner intervention. That is why this lecture matters now. In a market where buyers compare vendors more carefully, where labor costs are real, where compliance expectations matter, and where clients expect documentation as well as performance, a founder cannot afford to treat commercial cleaning as a casual side business. It is a serious operating model. The good news is that it is also an understandable one. Once the right principles are clear, the business becomes much easier to reason about. The listener can begin to see why some contracts are worth pursuing, why some prices fail, even when they sound competitive, and why the strongest companies often grow by becoming more focused rather than more scattered.
If the lecture succeeds, the listener should finish with a practical way of thinking, not just how to get started, but how to judge whether a prospect fits the business, whether a price protects the company, and whether the systems behind the service are strong enough to support growth. The real question underneath every part of the lecture is simple to state, though not always easy to answer. How does a founder turn cleaning labor into a reliable, defensible, scalable company? That is the question we will keep returning to, and it is the right place to begin.
End of introduction. Commercial cleaning looks simple from a distance. Many people first notice mops, vacuums, chemicals, and labor hours. In practice, the real product is something else. A commercial cleaning company sells reliability, consistency, access discipline, and trust.
The client is not mainly buying motion. The client is buying confidence that the building will be cleaned at the agreed time, in the agreed way, by people who can be trusted to enter, work, secure the site, and leave without surprises. That distinction matters from the first day of the business. If a founder thinks the company is only selling hours, the company will compete on the thinnest possible basis. If a founder understands that the company is selling dependable outcomes inside someone else's workplace, the business model becomes clearer immediately.
Reliability turns cleaning from a one-time task into an ongoing service. A law office, a school, a retail store, or a warehouse does not only need one night of labor. It needs routine that holds. It needs bathrooms stocked and presentable, floors maintained, trash removed, touch points handled, and the building left secure. Consistency matters for the same reason. A customer can accept many imperfections more easily than randomness. A service that is slightly basic but delivered the same way every time is often easier to retain than a service that is excellent one week and careless the next.
Access discipline is another core part of the product. In commercial work, cleaners often enter after hours, handle keys or codes, work around alarms, and move through areas with equipment, merchandise, records, or other controlled spaces. Trust follows from that. The cleaner is not only entering a building, the cleaner is entering a chain of responsibility. Commercial cleaning also differs from many casual service businesses because the client judges more than the visible result. Was the team on time? Did they follow site rules? Did they lock up correctly? Did they miss a room? Did they notify the point of contact if supplies were low or if an issue appeared?
In commercial environments, a missed step can become more than inconvenience. It can trigger complaints, create friction with staff, disrupt morning operations, or raise security concerns. So even at a basic level, the business is part cleaning system and part reliability system. The founder who understands that early makes better choices about customers, staffing, scheduling, and growth.
Massachusetts is an attractive place to build this kind of company, but it is not an easy place. The state offers dense commercial demand, especially around Boston and nearby regions. Offices, laboratories, professional suites, retail corridors, schools, public institutions, industrial buildings, and mixed-use properties create a large base of potential work. At the same time, the market is competitive. Many small operators already serve pieces of it. Buyers are often experienced. They compare scope, reliability, proof of insurance, response time, and documentation. They do not pick only on price.
Industry estimates for Massachusetts highlight both opportunity and seriousness. The Massachusetts janitorial services industry is estimated at about 33,064 businesses in 2026, growing at an average annual rate of about 5.1% from 2021 through 2026. Those estimates also place the market at about $3.4 billion in 2026, with more than 60,000 employees. These numbers do not guarantee success for any single entrant, but they do establish scale and competition.
A broader market view helps explain why the opportunity exists at all. Global estimates suggest that the commercial sector accounts for about 58.67% of the janitorial services market in 2026. In plain terms, much of the demand comes from places that must remain operational, presentable, and compliant on a repeating basis. Massachusetts fits that pattern as well.
Within that demand, service segments may sound similar from the outside, yet they behave differently in the field. The main categories are office cleaning, retail cleaning, industrial and warehouse cleaning, medical adjacent and healthcare cleaning, post-construction cleanup, and recurring janitorial service. Some segments are defined by building type. Others are defined by service pattern. A founder has to hear those differences clearly. The wrong mix at launch creates needless complexity. The same person can physically clean all of these spaces, but the business systems behind them are not the same. Access rules change. Security expectations change. Work may happen after hours or during narrow daytime windows. The approving contact may be a property manager, a practice administrator, a store operator, or a general contractor. Documentation needs vary. Tolerance for missed service varies even more.
Office cleaning is often the most intuitive entry point. Offices are familiar environments, so many founders start there. Even within offices, the range is wide. A small professional suite behaves differently from a large multi-tenant building. Access usually matters, since teams may enter after business hours, use keys or badges, and work in spaces with papers, electronics, and personal items. Clients typically expect a clean, predictable routine rather than a dramatic one-time transformation. Documentation expectations may be moderate, but clarity still matters. Clients want to know what is included, when it is done, and whom to call if something goes wrong.
Tolerance for missed service is not zero, but repeated misses can damage trust quickly.
Retail cleaning changes the rhythm. Cleanliness in retail is highly visible, so appearance creates immediate business value. Floors, glass, fitting areas, restrooms, entryways, and trash control shape the customer experience. Access may occur early in the morning, late at night, or in carefully managed off-hours windows. Building security can also be tighter than a founder expects, especially with alarms, cash procedures, merchandise control, or mall rules. The decision maker may be a store manager, a franchise owner, a regional operator, or a property representative. Documentation can become more structured when multiple locations are involved.
Tolerance for missed service is often very low because a dirty retail site shows up as soon as the doors open. Retail can be attractive when executed well, but it demands punctuality and dependable communication.
Industrial and warehouse cleaning introduces different constraints. These facilities may have larger footprints, active loading areas, equipment movement, shift schedules, and stricter rules about where cleaners can and cannot go. Access is not only about keys, it is also about approved zones, timing around operations, and knowing how to work without interfering with production or logistics. Documentation expectations may be stronger, especially where site rules require tracking incident reports or confirming scheduled tasks. Tolerance for missed service depends on the facility, but it can be low when cleanliness intersects with workflow, safety, or employee use areas.
A founder entering industrial work needs more than willingness to clean. The founder needs operating discipline.
Medical adjacent and healthcare cleaning tightens requirements further. This category includes spaces connected to patient care or health services, even when they are not large hospitals. Cleanliness standards can sit closer to formal protocol than ordinary office preference. Access can be restricted, and security and privacy concerns may be stronger. Work may need to follow site-specific procedures, and documentation often carries more weight. The decision-maker may be a practice administrator, clinic manager, or facilities contact who reviews vendors carefully. Tolerance for missed service is typically very low because the stakes feel higher and the environment is more sensitive.
A founder can build a strong niche here, but only by respecting that the segment is not simply office cleaning with a different sign on the door. Post-construction cleanup is different again. It is usually project work rather than pure recurring service. The building may be new, renovated, or nearing turnover. The decision maker is often tied to the construction side, such as a general contractor, project manager, or site superintendent. Access is shaped by the job stage, other trades on site, and the readiness of the building. Security is less about nightly alarm routines and more about job site rules, scheduling, and coordination. Documentation may focus on scope completion, punch list expectations, and readiness for handoff. Tolerance for missed service can be severe because deadlines are fixed.
Post-construction work can produce meaningful revenue on a single project, but it is episodic. It does not, by itself, create the predictable operating rhythm that stabilizes a growing company.
That is why recurring janitorial service often becomes the center of gravity for a durable cleaning business. Recurring work means the client needs ongoing service at a repeated frequency. The exact schedule varies by account, but the business logic stays consistent. The company learns which tasks recur, what route is assigned, which supplies get used, when each building gets serviced, and who verifies quality.
This stabilizes cash flow because revenue does not have to be rebuilt from zero every month. It stabilizes hiring because staffing can be matched to known accounts instead of guessed from occasional projects. It improves supply planning because usage becomes more predictable. It improves route planning because stops can be grouped intelligently. It also improves owner retention, since the founder can spend more time protecting quality, retaining clients, and selecting the right next accounts.
One-off project work still has a place. It can bring in cash, open doors, and fill gaps. It can also be a useful add-on when the company already serves a site and the customer requests extra work. The problem comes when the founder builds the business around randomness. If the company moves from post-construction cleanup to occasional deep cleans and scattered special requests across a wide geography, it may stay busy, yet remain fragile. Revenue arrives in bursts. Staffing becomes reactive. Equipment and supplies shift from week to week. The owner spends too much time re-scoping work and too little time building systems.
Recurring contracts do not remove all risk, but they create the foundation that makes reliable hiring, scheduling, and margin control possible.
Because of that, one of the most important early decisions is where the first offer will land. A founder should decide early whether the initial focus is small offices, professional suites, retail storefronts, industrial spaces, medical adjacent accounts, construction contractors, or another narrow segment with a clear operating pattern. A broad answer, such as commercial cleaning for everyone, can sound flexible, but it often creates confusion. The company cannot standardize its pitch, estimate accurately, train consistently, or plan routes well when every prospect sits in a different operational world.
Narrowing the first offer does not trap the business forever, but it gives the company a stable starting language that makes everything else easier to build.
The first strategic choices are easy to describe, even if they are hard to execute. The founder needs to choose the service mix, the target account size, the service area, the operating hours, the staffing model,
and deliberate exclusions at launch. Service mix means deciding what kinds of work are included in the base offer. Target account size means deciding whether the company is built first for smaller recurring stops, mid-size sites, or larger and more complex accounts. Service area means drawing a real map rather than a hopeful one. Operating hours means deciding whether work will mostly happen in evening windows, overnight periods, early mornings, or a controlled combination.
Staffing model means deciding who performs the work and how supervision happens. Deliberate exclusions matter because every new company needs boundaries. Work that requires unfamiliar compliance, special equipment, scattered travel, or inconsistent scheduling can wait until the core recurring route is working.
Route density deserves special attention because it is one of the clearest places where revenue and profit diverge. Two accounts can look similar on paper and produce very different results in reality. If accounts are close, the crew travels less, parking is simpler, supplies are easier to carry, inspections are easier to run, and schedule disruptions are easier to absorb. If the same two accounts are separated by long drives, traffic bottlenecks, or difficult parking, the company loses time before a mop touches the floor. In the Boston area, travel friction can erase margin that looked acceptable during estimating. So two accounts near each other can be more valuable than two equally priced accounts spaced far apart.
Density is not just convenience. It is economics. That principle also changes how a founder thinks about service area. Many new operators feel pressure to say yes to any building that will buy. In the short run, it can feel like momentum. In the long run, it often creates a scattered route that is expensive to manage and hard to staff. A disciplined founder often does better winning fewer accounts inside a tighter geography than collecting mismatched work across the state. Dense clusters around Boston and nearby regions create opportunity, but the company still has to choose where it wants density to exist. A cleaning business does not become efficient just because there are many buildings in a state.
It becomes efficient when the company's own routes, inspections, supplies, and response times can operate together in a tight system.
Target account size matters for similar reasons. Smaller accounts can be easier to win because purchasing can be simpler and scope can be narrower. But small accounts also mean more stops, more lockups, more travel transitions, and more customer relationships for the same total revenue. Larger accounts concentrate revenue into fewer relationships, but they usually require more demanding scopes, more formal buying processes, and greater consequences if the service fails. The best early target is often not the biggest building that will sign. It is the type of account the company can service well, inspect easily, and cluster efficiently.
A founder should ask both whether an account can be won and whether it fits the route and operating model.
Operating hours reinforce those choices. Commercial cleaning often happens after hours because that is when space is available. But after-hours work is not one uniform category. Some buildings allow wide evening access windows. Others require narrow time periods. Some sites are easy to lock and leave. Others involve alarms, escorted entry, or layered security. By choosing a segment, the founder is choosing a time pattern too, which affects staffing. Some workers prefer evening routines near home. Some routes are harder to cover because stops are too far apart or too inconsistent. If the founder ignores that link, the schedule begins to fail, even when the sales pipeline looks healthy.
The staffing model, then, becomes one of the most important design choices at launch. There are three common ways to start. The first is the solo operator model. The second is the owner plus a small crew model. The third is a supervisor light model, in which the founder primarily sells, manages customer relationships, and inspects quality while crews perform the recurring work. Each approach can work,
each changes the cost structure and the speed at which the company can grow. The wrong model for the chosen segment can create strain quickly.
In the solo operator model, the founder sells the work, performs the work, buys supplies, drives the route, and handles billing. Cash costs may be lower at the beginning because there are few or no employee wages and limited payroll tax exposure. Equipment needs can remain basic. Transportation is usually one vehicle, and software can stay minimal. Marketing often relies on direct outreach and local networking. The hidden cost is administrative time and owner capacity. Every hour spent cleaning is an hour not spent selling, quoting, following up, or building systems. The solo model can be sensible for learning the business and validating a niche, but it caps scale unless the founder changes roles.
The owner plus small crew model adds capacity earlier. The founder still participates in operations, but not every service hour depends on the founder's hands. That makes it easier to cover more recurring work and build route density sooner. It also changes cost buckets quickly. Labor becomes the main expense. Payroll taxes appear with employees. Insurance becomes more important because staff enter client facilities. Supplies increase with work volume, and equipment needs expand beyond the bare minimum. Transportation costs can rise when crews and supervisors move between sites. Software becomes more useful for scheduling, invoicing, communication, and inspection tracking.
Marketing still matters because the company needs enough recurring revenue to keep the crew productively busy. Administrative time rises too through hiring, onboarding, payroll, quality checks, and customer follow-up.
The supervisor light model shifts the founder away from nightly production sooner. Crews perform most recurring work, while the founder focuses on selling, inspecting, solving problems, and protecting customer relationships. This can be the most scalable model when the founder has enough recurring work, enough standardization, and enough trust in the crews to operate reliably. Labor remains the dominant cost, and payroll taxes remain important. Insurance, equipment, transportation, and supplies still scale with field activity. Software becomes more valuable because scheduling, communication, quality checks, and billing depend on coordination rather than memory.
Marketing also matters more as the founder's role shifts toward pipeline development and retention. Administrative time does not disappear. It often increases in a different form, with less time emptying trash and more time ensuring the right trash removal happens every night.
Before the first bid is issued, the groundwork has to be in place. The business must be properly registered. Local permit requirements need to be checked. Tax setup has to be handled. Banking must be separated and organized. Insurance must be secured, and the company must be able to provide certificates when prospects ask. Equipment has to be purchased and supply sources identified so replenishment is not improvised at the last minute.
The company also needs a simple estimating process. It does not have to be elaborate at the beginning, but it has to be consistent. The founder needs a repeatable way to walk a site, note the scope, consider access and frequency, think through labor and supplies, and convert that information into a bid. Without that process, the company is not really selling a controlled service. It is guessing.
One practical lesson follows from these choices. A cleaning company becomes easier to run when it starts narrow, standardizes the offer, builds route density, and resists specialty sprawl before the core recurring route is full. That means choosing the first segment carefully, deciding what is included and excluded, keeping the geography tighter than instinct first suggests, and selecting a staffing model that matches the work. It also means remembering that recurring janitorial service usually stabilizes the operating engine, while project work can help but is less dependable as a foundation. When trust, access discipline, and consistency are treated as core parts of the product, the result is reliability delivered.
Once those basics are clear, the next layer becomes easier to understand. Pricing stops looking like guesswork.
Sales stops looking like random hustle. Operations stops looking like nightly improvisation. The company begins to look like what it really is, a reliability business built inside other people's buildings. This is general educational information, not individualized financial advice. Pricing and contract decisions should be discussed with qualified business, legal, or insurance advisors.
As the route begins to take shape, pricing becomes a disciplined translation of labor, risk, scope, frequency, overhead, and desired profit into a quote that can be defended. A quote can win work and still damage the company. If the price does not cover the real cost of entering the building, cleaning to spec, supervising the work, carrying insurance, and leaving room for profit, the company has not sold a healthy contract. It has bought a future problem.
Commercial cleaning uses several common pricing architectures. A scope-based bid starts with the actual tasks and frequencies the client wants. Hourly pricing charges for time, often when the time requirement is the biggest uncertainty. Per square foot pricing uses measurable area as a proxy for labor. A flat monthly fee packages recurring service into a stable invoice. Project pricing fits discrete jobs with a beginning and an end. Value-based pricing reflects not only labor inputs, but also business importance, including reliability, discretion, access discipline, and compliance.
These approaches are not rigid boxes. Many contracts blend logic. A recurring office contract might be billed monthly while still being estimated from a scope-based labor model. A post-construction cleanup might be sold as a project, while hours, sequencing, and contingency are still built into the number. The key discipline is that the pricing method must match the operational reality the company will actually deliver.
For most founders, scope comes first. Commercial clients are not buying abstract square footage. They are buying visible and repeatable outcomes. Trash should be removed. Restrooms should be cleaned and restocked if that is included in the agreement. Floors should be maintained at the promised frequency. Touch surfaces, break areas, entry points, and shared spaces should reflect what the client expects on a routine basis. A scope-based bid forces the founder to ask what happens on each visit, what happens less often, what is excluded, and what conditions make the work slower or riskier. Without that discipline, pricing becomes a number disconnected from the service that must be delivered.
Per square foot pricing works best when area truly predicts labor with reasonable consistency, which usually means recurring contracts in larger buildings, stable frequencies, and predictable tasks. In those settings, area can serve as a baseline because the work pattern repeats. When complexity, compliance needs, or access friction change, a square foot figure can mislead.
Hourly pricing fits best when scope is uncertain, labor demand can swing sharply, or the job is too small for area-based pricing to say much. One-time cleanings often belong here, including move-ins, move-outs, tenant turnover work, post-construction cleanup, and many smaller office accounts. On very small accounts, fixed work such as entry, setup, restroom cleaning, trash removal, lockup, and travel can dominate total time. Square footage alone can hide that reality. Hourly pricing can still be quoted professionally, but it should come with clear expectations, estimated hours, and rules for what happens if site conditions differ from the original walkthrough.
Flat monthly fees are common in recurring janitorial service because they make client budgeting easier and vendor cash flow steadier. But a monthly fee is a billing format, not a guarantee of profitability. It only works when the underlying scope, labor model, and visit frequency are understood. If those assumptions are wrong, the invoice may look stable, while the margin collapses behind the scenes.
Project pricing serves a different purpose. It is appropriate when the work has defined boundaries, allowing the company to estimate hours, constraints, and completion criteria more tightly. Value-based pricing appears when client failure is unusually costly,
or when the vendor is clearly solving a business pain that matters more than raw labor time. Even then, value-based pricing should sit on top of cost discipline, rather than replace it.
There is no single universal commercial cleaning price. A routine office, a retail store, an industrial space, a medical adjacent facility, and a post-construction cleanup are not interchangeable products. A routine office with predictable evening access, moderate restroom volume, and standard trash needs may align with ordinary baseline approaches. Retail can price higher because public-facing floors, entry glass, and visible presentation must perform every day. Industrial pricing varies due to layout, soil conditions, safety constraints, and where crews are allowed to work.
Medical adjacent facilities often price above basic office cleaning because procedures, documentation, and environmental sensitivity increase labor discipline and risk. Post-construction cleanup often needs a separate pricing logic from routine recurring service because debris and dust load plus deadline pressure make labor less stable from the outset.
Frequency changes the quote in ways beginners often miss. A building cleaned 5 nights per week does not simply behave like a 3-night building with 2 extra visits added. Higher frequency changes staffing logic, supervisory attention, supply flow, key access routines, and customer expectations. On a lower frequency account, a missed night can be serious. On a higher frequency account, visible gaps can appear immediately in the next business day and trigger stronger dissatisfaction. Higher frequency also means more entries, more lockups, more opportunities for access or alarm mistakes, more supply usage, and more need for dependable backup coverage when a worker is absent.
Frequency increases labor, and it also changes the risk profile and the management load behind the labor.
Access conditions matter just as much. After-hours entry sounds simple until it is not. Alarm procedures take time and require consistent reliability. Secure areas slow movement and can restrict who can enter. Keys and badges create control obligations. Elevators add waiting time, especially in larger buildings with restricted movement after hours. Trash removal routes can turn a short task into repeated trips across long hallways, loading areas, or service corridors. Restroom count can drive labor more strongly than raw square footage in some facilities. Flooring type matters because carpet and specialty surface maintenance do not consume labor in the same way. Specialty tasks can change the bid again.
The lesson is straightforward. Labor hours come not only from building size, but from the building's operating reality.
Massachusetts makes this cost logic especially important because labor is the foundation. There is a wage floor that affects staffing at every hour. When a route design pushes crews beyond sustainable weekly hours, overtime pressure can change economics quickly. Underpricing often hides at the estimating stage and reappears later as overtime, missed service, rushed work, or chronic staffing strain. A founder who ignores labor cost is not being aggressive. The founder is shifting the problem downstream into operations, quality control, and retention risk.
Insurance and field friction also push the quote upward. Workers' compensation and general liability are not decorative line items. They are part of the cost of entering professional buildings as a credible vendor. Travel time matters when accounts are scattered. Fuel and parking matter, particularly in dense areas where parking can be a direct cash expense and also an indirect labor expense. Supervision matters because recurring commercial work requires inspection, problem resolution, training, and coverage planning. Dense market overhead is real too, since urban locations can bring tighter access windows, more building logistics, and more time lost to traffic and loading constraints.
A quote that might work in a lower friction market can fail in Boston, even when square footage looks similar on paper.
A simple bid can be built with a clear internal sequence. First, estimate hands-on cleaning time, often called production hours, required by the scope at the promised frequency. Second, apply the wage needed to staff those hours and add payroll burden, meaning taxes and other labor-linked costs beyond base pay. Third, include supplies and an allowance for equipment wear, replacement, or usage. Fourth, allocate insurance, supervision, travel, administration, and other overhead. Only then should the founder apply a target margin and arrive at a defensible selling price. This sequence matters because it forces the quote to reflect the real operating model.
It also makes the price easier to explain when a prospect pushes back or when a renewal needs careful review.
Margin language needs to be clear as well. Gross margin is what remains after direct service delivery costs are removed from revenue. Operating margin goes further and subtracts overhead required to run the business, such as supervision, administration, software, office support, and general operating expenses. Net margin subtracts all expenses, including the full overhead stack. Revenue can look strong, while hidden costs erode profitability. A calendar can look full, while margin is thin, overhead is loose, or rework consumes labor.
Because labor dominates the model, payroll relative to revenue deserves attention. A payroll-to-revenue ratio that runs very high can signal underpricing, inefficient scheduling, or too much non-billable labor. It is not a universal rule, and it does not answer every question on its own. It is still a useful warning light. If payroll keeps rising without corresponding improvement in service quality or revenue, the founder should investigate whether the route is too dispersed, access is causing delays, overtime is filling holes that better scheduling could prevent, callbacks and missed tasks are forcing extra labor, or the company is carrying too much non-billable time in travel, training, or problem correction.
This ratio does not fix the business by itself. It helps reveal where the pricing and operating system are losing discipline.
Once the quote is sound, the contract turns price into a controlled promise. At a minimum, the agreement should define the scope of work, the cleaning frequencies, and the exclusions. It should specify add-ons, supply responsibilities, payment terms, any minimum hours, change order rules, renewal terms, and any escalation clauses. Each element prevents predictable arguments later. Scope defines what is being delivered. Frequency defines when it happens. Exclusions prevent assumptions that every possible specialty task is included in the base fee. Add-ons create a way to handle extra work without pretend inclusion. Minimum hours protect the company when small extra requests would otherwise disrupt the route without fair compensation.
Change order rules matter because buildings change. Tenants expand. A suite becomes occupied more heavily. A restroom is added to the service expectation. A client requests more frequent attention to a break area or lobby. Without change orders, the company experiences silent scope creep that shows up as margin loss and operational stress. Renewal terms matter because recurring service lives or dies on retention. Escalation clauses matter because labor and supply costs change over time, and without a way to address that, a long-running agreement can become economically unrealistic.
Contract structure also affects how problems are corrected. Some contracts start month to month for flexibility. Some include a defined cancellation window. Others rely on annual renewals for planning stability. A common middle ground is a performance-based correction period, where documented service issues trigger a defined opportunity for the vendor to fix problems before termination. That structure protects clients and also recognizes that service businesses need a fair chance to correct failures rather than being removed instantly after a single complaint.
The difference between a recurring office contract and a post-construction cleanup also clarifies why pricing and contracts cannot be copied. Recurring service depends on repeatable routines and retention. The tasks become known, the schedule stabilizes, the route can be built around the account, and the economic value of the customer can grow over time.
quality control becomes consistency-focused. Profitability depends on accurate labor planning, route density, low rework, and long retention. Post-construction depends on controlled uncertainty, deadline pressure, uncertain debris conditions, and job site readiness. Other trades may still be present. Final cleaning standards can tighten as turnover approaches.
Labor needs can rise late in the project when site conditions shift. Proposals often require more caution and clearer discussion about what the price assumes, because the repeatability engine is not the same as recurring service.
When pricing and contract structure are understood, sales becomes less mysterious. The pipeline is not random hustle. It is sequence. The company defines the target account, builds a prospect list, identifies the decision maker, sends outreach, books a walkthrough, asks diagnostic questions, prepares a proposal, follows up, and then closes or continues nurturing. Each step filters time. Vague targeting produces weak lists. Weak lists increase outreach volume while relevance falls. Wrong decision makers produce polite conversations without conversion. Without a walkthrough, proposals become guesswork. Without follow-up, many viable opportunities go stale.
Lead channels differ because buyers behave differently. Cold email can work well when the company knows what kinds of buildings it wants and can speak to recognizable pain points. Local search and referrals matter when buyers evaluate vendors in a specific area. Paid ads can generate inbound interest, but they require discipline because clicks are not the same as qualified accounts. Property managers can open doors to recurring work across suites and buildings. Construction firms can create project cleanup demand. Facility roles influence decision-making because they live with the operational consequences of cleanliness, access discipline, and missteps.
The walkthrough is where a possible lead becomes a real estimate. It is where the founder moves beyond square footage and starts hearing labor drivers, access constraints, and risk. Diagnostic questions matter. How often is service truly needed? What time window is available? How is the building accessed after hours? Are there alarm procedures? Are any areas secure or restricted? How many restrooms drive daily labor? What flooring types are present? How far is trash moved? Are supplies included or separate? What problems is the current vendor not solving? What does success look like the morning after service? These questions do more than improve the quote. They signal that the company thinks in operations, not just price.
A strong proposal translates the walkthrough into plain business language. It should state what is included on regular visits, what happens less often, what is excluded, what the price assumes, how extra work is approved, and what the billing structure will be. It should match how the building is actually used. Vague proposals may feel fast to send, but they create expensive ambiguity later. Follow-up matters because commercial buying cycles can be slow and involve multiple reviewers, budget timing, or ongoing vendor comparisons. Silence does not always mean rejection. Sometimes it means the prospect has not decided yet.
Across channels, the company should track metrics that actually move revenue. Response rates matter because they indicate whether outreach reaches the right people. Meeting bookings matter because a booked walkthrough is far more meaningful than vague interest. Proposals sent matter because they show how many conversations become real opportunities. Closed deals reveal whether pricing logic survives contact with the market. Retention matters because in recurring service, the real value of sales is not only the signed contract, but also the gross profit that follows month after month. Email open rates are often less useful as a primary signal than response quality, walkthrough progression, and retention outcomes.
The deeper reason is that customer acquisition must be judged against customer economics. Cost per lead measures what the company spends to generate an interested prospect. Customer acquisition cost measures what the company spends to win a paying customer after marketing and sales effort are counted.
Customer lifetime value asks how much value that customer produces over the relationship. In recurring commercial cleaning, it is often most useful to think in terms of gross margin rather than only revenue. Retention length matters because a customer who stays longer generates more service cycles. Gross margin matters because revenue mostly consumed by labor, travel, and rework does not leave enough room to recover acquisition cost.
From that logic, maximum affordable acquisition cost becomes easier to reason through. If close rates are weak, accounts are small, retention is short, or gross margin is thin, the company cannot responsibly spend much to win business through that channel. If well-fitted accounts close efficiently, stay for a long time, and deliver healthy gross margin, the company can justify higher acquisition spending. The core decision is connecting cost per lead, customer acquisition cost, customer lifetime value, retention, and gross margin into one operating view. Only then can the founder grow without purchasing unprofitable work.
At that point, pricing, contracts, and sales stop looking like separate topics. They become one commercial system. The price has to reflect the true cost of reliable service. The contract has to preserve the assumptions behind that price. The sales process has to attract accounts that fit the route and operating model. And acquisition spending has to make sense relative to margin and retention the company can realistically achieve. A founder who understands these links no longer treats growth as a race to send more quotes. The business becomes a repeatable effort to win the right work at the right price on terms the company can actually deliver.
Next, the focus shifts from winning work to keeping it. The question becomes how to build the operating system that turns a defensible quote into consistent service. Staffing and scheduling, quality control, documentation, safety routines, insurance-aware risk management, and the sequencing of growth so margin does not collapse as coverage expands.
Scale begins when the founder stops relying on memory and heroics and starts relying on systems that make good service repeatable. In the earliest stage, a founder can sometimes keep everything in mind. Which door sticks? Which client wants extra attention in a conference room? Which alarm code changed? Which restroom runs low on paper towels? Which cleaner needs a reminder about lockup? Personal control can carry a small business for a while, but it cannot carry a company that wants to grow.
A commercial cleaning company scales only when reliability does not depend on one unusually attentive person. The work has to be described, scheduled, staffed, checked, documented, and corrected in ways that survive ordinary pressure. Employees get sick. Clients update access instructions. Buildings add tenants. Traffic delays routes. Supplies run low. A supervisor misses a call. Growth does not remove these problems. Growth multiplies them. So the founder's central task changes. The founder is no longer only selling work or performing it. The founder is building the operating system that allows other people to deliver the service consistently, even on a stressful night. That system begins with staffing. In a solo model, the founder can move fast at the beginning because there are fewer people to coordinate. The cost structure is simpler. The founder provides the labor, controls the schedule, and sees quality firsthand. But the owner's workload becomes severe, and the ceiling is low. Every new account competes with selling time, estimating time, invoicing time, supply runs, and sleep.
Crew-based work changes the business. Once cleaners are added, the company gains production capacity, can service more accounts, and can build denser routes. Quality is now produced through training and standards rather than owner instinct. The company must handle onboarding, payroll, attendance, communication, and backup coverage.
Supervisor-led accounts represent another step. In this model, site leads and supervisors carry responsibility for execution across crews or accounts.
the owner can spend more time on sales, client relationships, inspections, finance, and management development. This model can support larger contracts and more accounts, but it adds a cost layer. Supervisors need time for inspecting, training, communicating, solving access problems, and responding to complaints. If that time is not built into pricing, the company can look like it is growing while profitability weakens. If it is built in, the company can shift away from owner-dependent service toward a true management structure.
Each staffing model creates a distinct risk profile. In a solo model, the largest risk is owner overload. In a crew model, the largest risk is inconsistent execution and employee turnover. In a supervisor-led model, the largest risk is management weakness. A weak supervisor can allow problems to multiply across many accounts before the founder sees them. A strong supervisor converts standards into daily behavior. In commercial cleaning, the client experiences whether the work was guided, checked, and corrected.
The staffing challenge sits inside a difficult labor market. Cleaning businesses often face a chronic shortage of reliable workers, especially for evening, overnight, early morning, or physically demanding schedules. Labor scarcity affects cost, quality, attendance, and retention. When accounts are understaffed, crews rush, details get missed. When absences cannot be covered, visits run late or get skipped. When emergencies become constant, good employees leave.
Retention becomes one of the strongest operating levers. Competitive pay matters because companies compete for workers with other service, warehouse, retail, and facility jobs. Predictable scheduling matters because many workers balance transportation, childcare, second jobs, or family obligations. Respectful supervision matters because cleaners work when clients and managers are not always present, and poor treatment destroys trust. Training matters because employees succeed faster when they understand what good work looks like.
Mentorship supports newer employees as they learn the route, the standards, and the pace of commercial service. Referral incentives can help too, because reliable employees often know other reliable people. Stay interviews can reveal why people remain and what might cause them to leave. Visible advancement paths also matter, such as progression from cleaner to site lead and from site lead to supervisor. Advancement does not need to be elaborate at the beginning. It does need to be real.
Cross-training reduces dependence on any single person. If only one cleaner knows how a building's alarm procedures work, the account becomes fragile. If only one site lead knows how access works, the route becomes fragile. If only one supervisor understands documentation expectations in a medical adjacent account, the operation becomes fragile. Cross-training means more than saying that someone can fill in. It means ensuring the backup person has seen the site, understands the checklist, knows the access routine, and can perform the work without turning the visit into an experiment.
Manager development follows the same logic. The company should not wait until a supervisor leaves to discover that no one else knows how to inspect, coach, communicate with clients, or handle a complaint.
Scheduling is where labor planning meets reality. A schedule is not just a calendar with names attached. It is a promise that a specific person or crew can reach a specific building at a specific time, with the right supplies, enough labor hours, and a clear understanding of the work plan. Route density remains a key discipline. Accounts close together are easier to staff, easier to inspect, easier to cover, and easier to correct. Accounts scattered across a wide area can generate revenue while consuming margin through travel time, parking friction, coordination overhead, and fatigue.
Travel buffers belong in professional scheduling. A route that works only if every door opens immediately, every worker arrives perfectly, and parking is always available is not a real route. It is wishful thinking. In dense commercial areas, schedules should account for traffic patterns, parking limitations, building entry procedures,
elevator delays, loading areas, and after-hours access rules. Realistic time estimates protect quality.
If restroom count drives extra labor, the schedule should reflect it. If a trash route requires repeated trips across long corridors, the schedule should reflect it. If a security procedure adds time, the schedule should reflect it. The schedule should mirror the building's operating reality rather than the founder's best guess. On-call coverage is part of scheduling discipline because absences will happen. Weather will interfere. Vehicles will fail. People will miss alarms or misunderstand instructions. The question is not whether disruptions appear. The question is whether the company has a planned response.
Backup keys and clearly documented access procedures reduce the chance that one missing key holder stops an entire visit. Digital check-ins can also strengthen attendance visibility and reduce uncertainty. In plain language, a location-based check-in ties clock-in or check-in to the job site location. It does not replace supervision. It helps confirm that people arrived where they were supposed to be when they were supposed to arrive.
The quality control system turns promised scope into a repeatable routine. At the base are room-by-room checklists. A checklist for an office, a restroom, a break room, a lobby, an exam room, a warehouse office, or a retail sales floor should match what is actually performed in that space. Generic reminders can help, but client-specific instructions matter more. One client may care intensely about entry glass. Another may care about conference room tables. Another may have a locked supply closet or special trash instructions. Quality improves when these details are captured in a usable form, rather than passed along verbally and forgotten.
Inspections make the system real. A checklist that no one verifies becomes a document of intention, not a management tool. Inspections can start with the owner and later shift to supervisors or trained site leads as the business grows. Photo or note capture can support documentation of completion, recurring issues, damage that was already present, or confirmation that a correction was made. The goal is not surveillance theater. The goal is a clear record of service and a fast path from problem to correction.
Correction loops protect accounts or destroy them. When a client reports a problem, the company should know who receives the complaint, who investigates it, who corrects it, how quickly correction is expected, and how the client is informed. The most damaging complaints are often not dramatic failures. They are recurring missed details, inconsistent visits, late arrivals, and poor communication. A missed trash item once may be forgivable. A missed trash item every week becomes evidence of a system problem. A late arrival once may be explainable. A pattern of late arrivals becomes a reliability issue. Poor communication turns small mistakes into larger trust failures.
Documentation is the company's memory. Service logs show when work was performed and can note unusual conditions. Incident reports capture injuries, property damage, security problems, access failures, chemical spills, and other events that require a record. Training records show what employees were taught and when. Inspection records show whether quality was checked and what was found. Inventory tracking helps prevent crews from arriving without liners, paper goods, chemicals, gloves, or other supplies needed to complete the work.
In environments involving chemicals, employees need hazard information and safe handling guidance. Safety data sheets provide information about chemical hazards, safe handling and storage, and emergency measures. Client communication history helps the company remember decisions, complaints, approvals, and changes. Change order records protect the boundary between the original agreement and added work.
The operating numbers should be simple enough to track and serious enough to matter. On-time rate shows whether visits begin when promised. Completion rate shows whether scheduled visits are finished. Utilization helps reveal whether paid labor is used productively or consumed by avoidable waiting, travel, and idle time. Payroll-to-revenue ratio can show whether pricing, scheduling, and labor deployment are healthy.
Complaint frequency shows whether clients experience repeated friction. Correction time shows how quickly the company resolves issues once something goes wrong. Employee turnover and account retention show whether staffing and the sales pipeline are producing stable outcomes.
These numbers are not decoration. They tell the founder where the system leaks. Weak on-time rate can point to unrealistic routes, weak attendance control, or access confusion. High complaint frequency can point to poor training, weak inspections, or a mismatch between price and scope. Slow correction time can show that no one owns the response process. High employee turnover can signal scheduling instability, weak supervision, low pay, or gaps in onboarding. Account churn can show that sales brings in the wrong accounts, pricing pushes rushed work, or quality systems are not strong enough.
Safety is part of the same operating discipline. Cleaning work involves real job site risks. Hazard communication means employees must understand the chemicals they use, the hazards those products can present, and where safety information is kept. Personal protective equipment, such as gloves and eye protection where appropriate, must match the task and the product. Dilution control matters, since more chemical is not automatically better cleaning. Incorrect dilution can waste money, damage surfaces, create residues, or increase exposure. Ventilation matters when products produce fumes or when work is performed in enclosed areas.
Product label compliance is especially important for disinfectants. If a disinfectant is used, the company should follow the product label. That includes how the product is applied, what surfaces it is intended for, and any required contact time. Disinfection is not effective simply because a product is sprayed and immediately wiped away if the label requires the surface to remain wet for a specific period. Cleaning and disinfection should not be treated as interchangeable terms. Cleaning removes soil and organic material. Disinfection uses an appropriate product to reduce microorganisms under the conditions required by that product. In ordinary office cleaning, the distinction still matters.
In medical adjacent and healthcare accounts, it becomes non-negotiable.
Medical adjacent and healthcare environments require tighter discipline because the consequences of poor procedure are higher. Two-step cleaning and disinfection is a core idea. First, soil and residue are removed through cleaning. Then, when disinfection is required, an appropriate disinfectant is used according to its label. High-touch surfaces require consistent attention because they are contacted frequently by hands. Door handles, switches, counters, railings, restroom fixtures, waiting area surfaces, and clinical touch points may require special attention based on site requirements.
Bloodborne pathogen awareness is also essential where employees could encounter blood or other potentially infectious material. This affects training, personal protective equipment, reporting, cleanup procedures, and decisions about when a task requires specialized handling. Documentation in these environments becomes part of service delivery. Clients may need evidence that procedures were followed, that visits occurred, that high-touch areas were addressed, and that incidents were reported. A healthcare buyer is often asking not only whether the room looks clean, but whether the vendor can follow a controlled process in a sensitive environment.
Job site risk management extends beyond chemicals. Slips, trips, and falls can occur because floors may be wet, cords may cross paths, lighting may be low, and work may happen after normal business hours. Lifting injuries can occur when employees move trash, supplies, equipment, or floor machines without proper technique. Chemical exposure can occur through splashes, fumes, skin contact, or mixing products that should not be mixed. Bloodborne pathogen exposure can occur through sharps, blood, or contaminated materials. Security risks arise when cleaners hold keys, badges, codes, or access restricted areas. Alarm systems create additional risk because mistakes can trigger police response, client frustration, or fees.
Lone work
deserves special attention. Many cleaners work after hours when buildings are mostly empty. If someone is injured, locked in, threatened, or unable to access help, the company needs a plan. After-hours building entry should be treated as a controlled procedure. The company should know who is on site, how they enter, how they leave, and how the building is secured. The company should also have a response plan for alarms, suspicious activity, water leaks, broken doors, or other unexpected conditions.
In Massachusetts, compliance and risk management require early attention. Employers generally need workers' compensation coverage for employees. General liability insurance is a basic expectation in commercial cleaning because cleaners enter client facilities and can accidentally damage property or be accused of causing damage. Commercial auto coverage can become relevant when vehicles are used for business purposes. Many clients also expect bonding in settings involving keys, after-hours access, or exposure to property.
Local permit checks matter because requirements can vary by municipality and by the nature of the work. A founder should not assume that forming an entity and buying equipment covers everything. If the business model changes into supplying workers through a staffing agency arrangement, licensing rules may become relevant. Clarifying compliance early matters, so rules match the actual business model rather than a vague label.
Certifications can help communicate seriousness, but they should be understood operationally rather than treated as badges alone. For example, the Cleaning Industry Management Standard, often called CIMS, emphasizes documented management systems and standardized processes. Green Seal signals commitment to sustainability through environmentally preferable products and safer chemical choices. For some buyers, especially institutions with sustainability policies, these signals can influence vendor selection. While the operational question remains the same, can the company actually purchase, train on, dilute, and document the practices it claims?
Technology supports the operating system, but it does not substitute for it. Scheduling software helps assign accounts, workers, routes, and frequencies. Quoting tools can make estimating more consistent. Customer relationship management systems help track prospects, contacts, follow-ups, proposals, and client communication. Timekeeping systems help show who worked, when, and where. Inspection capture tools document quality checks, deficiencies, photos, notes, and corrections. Workforce planning helps managers see staffing needs before the schedule fails. Route planning reduces travel waste. Inventory tracking helps make sure supplies are available before crews arrive.
Client communication tools help ensure requests, complaints, and approvals are not lost across scattered messages.
A practical technology stack should match the company's stage. A founder does not need the most elaborate system on day one. The founder does need a way to prevent essential information from living only in memory, informal text threads, or paper scraps. As accounts grow, the cost of lost information rises. A missing access note can cause a missed visit. A forgotten change order can erase margin. A complaint that is not recorded can repeat until a client cancels. A timekeeping gap can create payroll confusion. The right tools make the process easier to follow, easier to inspect, and easier to improve.
Digitized quality assurance is a durable trend. Clients increasingly expect clearer records, faster responses, and proof that service occurred. Higher documentation expectations are also durable in commercial cleaning. Buyers often want clearer scopes, insurance certificates, service records, inspection results, safety information, and communication history. These trends matter because they change how the company must operate, not because they sound modern.
Growth also needs sequencing. The founder should standardize one segment before chasing many. That means choosing a clear initial niche that matches capacity and risk tolerance, such as small professional offices, retail storefronts, medical adjacent suites, industrial office areas, or another focused category. The company should fill the core route before expanding too widely. A dense route is easier to staff,
inspect, supply, and defend.
Retention should improve before assuming more sales will fix weak operations. If clients are leaving because service is inconsistent, a larger pipeline only feeds a leaking bucket. After the core route is stable, adjacent accounts can be added, whether adjacent means geographically nearby, operationally similar, or both. Supervisory capacity should be built before the owner becomes the bottleneck. That means developing site leads, defining inspection routines, documenting client instructions, and giving supervisors enough time to manage.
Specialty services can strengthen the business when added carefully. Floor care, carpet care, window cleaning, consumable supply management, post-construction cleanup, and more specialized disinfection services can create additional revenue. But specialty work also requires training, equipment, procedures, and risk control. The founder should decide whether to build capability internally, extend capability through partners, or subcontract. The decision should be deliberate, not reflexive.
Before scaling, practical questions need clear answers. Which niche deserves the first focused push? The best niche is not always the largest one. It is where the company can sell credibly, price accurately, staff reliably, and deliver repeatable quality. Which systems must exist before the first hiring wave? Hiring before checklists, training, timekeeping, supervision, access procedures, and quality control are ready often creates expensive disorder. Which capabilities belong inside the company, and which should be handled through partners or subcontractors until volume justifies internal investment?
Scaling is not only doing more, it is doing more without allowing quality, safety, margin, or communication to decay. A company that doubles revenue but loses control of labor, complaint handling, turnover, and retention is not truly scaling. It is becoming busier and more fragile. A company that grows more slowly while improving route density, retention, documentation, supervision, and gross margin is building something stronger.
A practical founder action plan follows an order. First, choose the initial niche. A focused starting point clarifies later decisions. Second, define the standard offer. The company should know what is included, what is excluded, the frequency it prefers, the account size it wants, and the geography it will serve. Third, build a cost model that connects production hours, wages, payroll burden, supplies, equipment wear, travel, supervision, insurance, administration, and target margin to the actual quote. Fourth, secure insurance and basic compliance.
Workers' compensation, general liability, commercial auto when needed, bonding expectations, local permit checks, and licensing questions for the chosen model should be addressed before risks accumulate. Fifth, create the first prospect list of real target accounts. Sixth, sell through walkthroughs, where the founder learns the building's labor drivers, access constraints, and operational risks. Seventh, document the work, including scopes, checklists, client instructions, access procedures, change orders, service logs, and communication history. Eighth, inspect the work. Inspection protects the client, trains the crew, and shows the founder where the system is weak. Finally, scale only what can be repeated.
If the company cannot describe it, price it, staff it, train it, inspect it, and correct it, then it is not ready to multiply.
This is the operating side of commercial cleaning. The business may begin with mops, vacuums, chemicals, and a founder willing to work hard. It grows through systems. Staffing systems protect labor capacity. Scheduling systems protect punctuality. Quality systems protect consistency. Documentation systems protect memory. Safety systems protect workers and clients. Compliance and insurance protect the enterprise. Sales and pricing bring in the work. Operations keep it reliable. The founder who understands this relationship is not only trying to clean more buildings.
the founder is building a reliability company that can be trusted inside other people's workplaces night after night, visit after visit, and account after account.
This is general educational information, not legal or regulatory advice, and not a substitute for OSHA guidance or professional safety and compliance support for your specific workplace. Sources: Boston Business Journal coverage of DRB facility services, along with its Massachusetts company rankings, supplied the local growth example for how a janitorial business can scale in this market. Recent market research from Grandview Research and Fortune Business Insights provided the global and regional market size estimates, growth rates, and commercial segment breakdowns used to frame demand.
Massachusetts state sources, including Mass.gov, the Department of Labor Standards, and the Workers' Compensation Rating and Inspection Bureau of Massachusetts, anchored the sections on business registration, staffing agency rules, wage issues, and workers' compensation. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention informed the safety, disinfectant, and healthcare cleaning guidance, especially around hazard communication and higher compliance facilities.
ISSA's Cleaning Industry Management Standard and Green Seal Materials supported the discussion of certification, quality control, and green cleaning positioning. IBIS World Market Research, do not quote, supplied the profit margin benchmark, while commercial cleaning pricing guides from Janitorial Leads Pro, Big League Clean, and similar industry publishers informed the rate ranges, startup cost estimates, and contract examples. Practitioner guides on lead generation, operations, and retention inform the playbook sections on cold outreach, scheduling, inspection checklists, performance metrics, onboarding, and renewal language.
This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.